session number 18270, reel 3.
Paul Humber, reel 3. You were just telling me about the problems of spending the night in the jungle.
Yes, also, what we used to try and do, we used to try and keep a clean set of clothing to sleep with at night time, because that was, I found that was most essential, that you had dry clothes to sleep with at night, and then you could get a reasonable night's sleep. Because if you were wet and miserable all night, you couldn't sleep properly, and you started the next day off in feeling dreadful. So we used to make sure we try to keep our clothes, a set of clothes, dry all night, for all night wear. Next morning we'd take it off, and probably the clothes we took off the previous evening were still wet and soggy, but you had to brave it out and put those back on again, and smile at the world, and throw your big pack on your back, throw your brain gun over your shoulder, and just carry out your commanding officer's instructions, or your company commander, or whoever is in charge of you, the platoon commander or sergeant, and just get on with it. And that was the... But in certain areas we used to stay, we were lucky, because we used to come across where bamboo grew. And bamboo grows in certain parts of Malaya in a very large circumference, probably, 6 inches across, 9 inches across. And we used to cut down these bamboo poles, which grew probably 30, 40, 50 feet high. And we could make a bed out of these. What we used to do, we used to cut them in, say, 6 foot lengths. And at each nodule or joint, we used to split them down, say, an inch apart with our slasher. And there were two or three nodules in, what, say, 6 foot length. And then we used to split one right down to the middle, and then we used to open them out like a mat. And we only needed two of these to sleep on. And we used to lay two horizontally whole ones across the other way, and we'd lay these mats down on the top of this one, and so we were kept off the ground. So we were kept as dry. So if we were in an area where this bamboo grew, we used to count our lucky stars. And the lads used to call me Basher, because coming from the countryside, I was used to cutting trees down. And this is to say, Paul, come and cut down some bamboo for us. And we all got the knack of cutting these bamboo poles down and making a basher to sleep on. And then we had a good cape called a poncho cape. I don't know if the military still supply them today, but they were rather good. And a lad, my number two on the brain gun, a chap from Newcastle, Hudson, we had a poncho cape each, and we used to clip two poncho capes together and throw them over the roof, over the top. And we used to sleep two in a basher. And so that was our bed for the night. And we used to put four of these mats across on these two poles. And we used to sleep side by side. Him with his rifle, his bedpan, and me, bed companion, and me the other side with my brain gun, his companions, and big packs and wet clothes at the bottom. And we, if it was dark, when we was eating at night time, we used to have a candle between us. And so we used to eat our food, our soup or whatever we had, we used to eat it by candlelight with the rain probably pouring down outside of us, and the water running underneath of us. So and sometimes I say there's a python sliding underneath. For God's sake, shut up. So or spiders or whatever, because the place was full of ants as well. I used to get massive great soldier ants there, these great big red ants or black ants, whatever they were, great ingenious individuals, but my God, they used to bite. And then you was harangued by these wretched mosquitoes. So, but you were that worn out, you were that tired, and hopefully you soon went to sleep. So that was the... And hopefully next morning, the first... You hoped that the first half a mile or so, you didn't come across a river where you was up to your neck in water again, where you had to make sure your big pack didn't get wet, and your clothes and your big pack didn't get wet, so you had to put those on top of your head. And so, because that was a very great demoraliser for the day if you got wet after a first mile or so. Very much a downer.
Was your health affected by conditions in malaria?
Oh, yes, yes. The wear and tear of the body, 2 years of that, which our duration in 1950, must have been horrendous, because I was ill when I came back. I was ill for 9 months, so the stress and strain onto the body and to the mind. What I used to hate being on duty at night time was all these fireflies. And when you say you were on duty at 3 o'clock in the morning, and bearing in mind you'd struggle through the jungle all day, and you were the body was tired, the mind was tired. And there was all these fireflies flying around, wretched things. And suddenly your eyesight would pick up on one, and you swore blind. It was a bandit coming towards you with a cigarette in his mouth, and you would stand there, and I had a brain gun, and I used to make sure that the trigger was in, the safety catch was off, and I was in the immediate firing position, because... And then sometimes we had these wretched wild pigs. Well, they're not wretched really, but they had to make a living for themselves. And they used to root around in the jungle, in the undergrowth at night time. And these pigs would be rooting around in the undergrowth. Or you would hear wild elephants in the distance, because they used to cause havoc charging through. Because particularly when they were in the mating season, I think, 10 or a dozen elephants come charging through your camp. It would have been horrendous. It never happened to us, but we used to hear them in the distance. And you'd hear various monkeys crying out, various birds crying out, all sorts of animals crying out. But these wretched fireflies, I think they were my biggest hazard, seeing these things flying around. So your eyesight would pick up on one, and it used to throw all sorts of conundrums into your mind.
What exactly did you go into hospital in England for when you got back?
Well, I fell ill over Christmas in 1950. And then they said I had glandular fever. And then I then developed scrub typhus. Then I had malaria. And... I was just getting better than that in the Royal Herbert Hospital at Woolwich, when they brought a patient in with chickenpox, and so everybody in the ward caught chickenpox. So I was sent to the Cambridge Hospital in Aldershot with chickenpox. I was in an isolation ward with chickenpox, and I was so ill. I was so ill. I felt so I was dying. I remember one night the medical orderly came to me and said, "You've got to have a bath." I said, "Please, no, no, no." Anyway, two or three of them coaxed me into this warm bath of water, and I cried, screamed out, "Spare me," because I had these spots inside my mouth and everywhere. It was awful. So I was very ill at that time. But anyway, I recovered. The body has a great way of recovering, in certain instances, and I recovered.
Were you at Tapper the whole time?
No. We were posted around as a company in different areas. We were at Camper, where we had a swimming pool, and that brought about the downfall of a lot of men, because we caught something in our ears called Singapore ear, which put an infection into this wretched dirty water, and we had what's called Singapore ear, and it brought about the most excruciating pain ever. We were also in the Cameron Highlands in company strength, three company. That was on top of the hill there. We in the Highlands, which is quite a refreshing area to be in, actual fact. It's a holiday resort, in actual fact. And the temperature there is more like England, and not as opposed to it was in these other places like Tapa, where the humid is extremely high and you perspired all day long. And then we went to Kuala Kubaburu. There was another posting. When we were away from the battalion, these company postings were much sought after, because you were away from the rigid discipline of the big barrack square and the commanding officer's eyes and all his entourage watching you. So these company postings are individual. So that was, and then I think we went to one other place at Tataganson. And then we set up another place called a Colchin village, where we had to move all the villagers out and move them into a compound where the military could, or the police could, keep an eye on what was going on. So that was what, three, four of the different places we went to. We used to stay probably at these places for 3 months. Then another company went.
Was there any difference in enemy strength in these different areas?
Enemies were, the enemy were, yes, the enemy survived amongst the goodwill of the local population. And so obviously where they had goodwill of the local population, or the communists were strong in certain villages, in certain areas, they obviously survived better in those areas where the place was hostile to them. So in certain areas, Kuala Kubaburu, the enemy were quite strong in that area. Obviously, they had a lot of sympathisers in that area. So, of course, this type of banditry warfare benefits from the local population, or if they're hostile to them, of course, they would have to move on, because they would be reported by informers. Of course, very much in those days, the police relied very much upon informers, and of course, we had interpreters with us as well, and we also had Sakai guides with us. Or, as a term now, Orang Ashley, which is a local name. Orang is a person, and Ashley is a man of the forest.
What did you think of the Orang Ashley?
I think they were. I thought they were lovely folk. I really did. I thought they were. They enlightened us. They were so free and easy. I remember they used to have great big wide nostrils and great big wide flat feet, and they just used to wear a sarong. And they carried a knife called a parang, which was fabulous. Being a country lad, I thought this parang they carried was a fabulous weapon. They used to sharpen it. They used to go down, when we got to a river, they used to sharpen it in certain stones in the river. And they were very, very cute in the jungle, and little short chaps they were, little short people. And I remember we came across a small gang one day fishing, and they had a girl there with them. She was about 13, 14, 12, 13, and they were sending her down into this little whirlpool to catch these fish with her hand. They obviously had a skill at this. Anyway, when this girl came out of the water, all she had on was a loincloth around her waist, and she came out, and the water was dripping off of her face, down on her front, and over her nipples. And can you imagine the expression on 18, 19-year-old guardsmen who've been in the jungle for 2 years? She was a beautiful specimen. God, I always remember that to the day I die, I think, the sight of this girl. And But I thought they were lovely people, and we used to get a lot of fun out of them. Yeah, yeah, they did us a lot of good.
What was the attitude of the Orang Ashli towards what was going on in terms of the fighting?
I don't know. I couldn't speak. I mean, they were obviously paid to be with us as trackers or carriers of radios and heavy equipment. I don't know. I never spoke their language. I remember a few of their words. Puku Barapa, what's the time? Malan Piggy, where you go? I don't know. We never conversed with them. And I always remember one morning I sat down beside one during our rest period when we used to stop every hour or whatever it was, because it was so hot out and humid out, you had to keep stopping and take water and salt tablets. Because when you used to rub your arm was like sand all the time, because it was where you were sweating and all the salt was coming out of your body, and it rests on your skin as salt, as sand. And I looked up and there was a little bough above my head, and I pointed, and there was a snake slithering along this branch. And I said to the sack, whoop, and he looked up, and he slid his hand up the back of this snake, grabbed it but near the neck, pulled it off the branch, slit its throat, and he hung it on his loincloth. And that night, he cooked it on the fire, and he came over and offered me a piece. I said, no, thank you. I couldn't eat a snake. I'd have to have been starving too. But I found them lovely people. I don't know if any other soldiers found them to be it. We had one, what we called, he was called a pet, our company commander, DFD, as we called him, as his initials were. And they all said he was DFD's pet. This was a chap called Joe Harry. And I thought they were lovely people. And we used to watch them and how they behaved in the jungle.
Which one was Joe Harry?
Well, he seemed to be always with the company. Our company commander seemed to favour him for some reason or other. He used to carry his kit, I think. And
Joe Harry was the Sakai?
Joe Harry was the Sakai, yeah. Yeah, yeah, and he was always with the company commander and patrols. We went with the our company commander was called the Mad Major, or we termed him to be the Mad Major, and he was a great one for getting his compass out and his map out, and decided we went into uncharted territory. I always remember one thing: we were going up a hill one day, and all of a sudden the Sakai said they wouldn't go any further. And it was apparently supposed to be king cobras up there, so the Sakai's didn't like cobras. I don't blame them. So that stopped the company commander from going up this hill, which we were all rather pleased at, because the going was pretty tough and pretty rough, and very heavy going. I mean, if you're carrying half underweight or three quarters underweight on your back, and you've got a Bren gun slung across your shoulders, and you're slugging your guts out all day long, up and downhill. You get a break like that, rather relief.
So they helped you against the enemy?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. It was their task to, as trackers. Because you would see all sorts of things in the jungle. The bandits used to mark trees. They would put a mark in a tree to tell their colleagues which way they'd gone. Or they used to lay sticks out on the ground. There was all these signs. I mean, you can walk through the jungle and not notice a thing. But you could also walk through the jungle and you would see an enormous amount of... the bandits used to hide up in the tree. They would have one of the sentries up in the tree. And then he would have a long rope going back to his camp. Or wire, whatever. And you wouldn't hear... We wouldn't hear anything. But he would signal that there was somebody about, because he'd pulled this wire and it'd rung a bell in the camp, which may have been half a mile away. So by the time we got there, they could have scarpooshed. So there was lots of things, say marking of the trees, signals on the ground, or they would scratch on the ground in the soil, markings. And, I mean, if you were an ornithologist, whatever, there's so many birds and animals and trees to specify, and leaves, and there was quite a lot of interest in the rain, the different types of trees, there were different sorts of, in different areas, different things grew. And me coming from the country, in some ways, I was at home in the jungle. I remember one place where they were timber cutting, where they were hauling heavy trees on sledges over swampy ground. Trees weighing 5 ton, I should think. They were just sledging them on the sledges made out of cordwood. And then they'd take them down to the railway on a hand-pushed rail car and roll them into a big river, which was, half a mile wide. And then they would float them down to the timber mills in Tattaganson. Probably 1,000 trees at a time. I mean, there's all those interesting things to take note of. Life wasn't all dull there.
Did you come across one of these enemy sentries with a cord back to the camp?
No. We did see instances of it, but we never came across. We never had the. We may have passed them. I mean, this is a. I mean, when you were dredging your way through the jungle, you got to look up in the air. You got to look down on the ground. You know, we may well have passed them and never noticed them. So you know, that's a. If you're the enemy, you can hide like that, and the jungle is your natural habitat. You can do all sorts of things and hide in the jungle, and no one see you. And so they would be well hidden, and you wouldn't notice them. So we could well have passed underneath them, and they got away with it.
Did you ever have any trackers from Borneo?
Yeah, we had Dayaks with us, and Ebans. Yeah, they were lovely chaps as well. I remember one had a great big knife on him, and he used to carry bones. I got a photograph of him, actually. He got all these bones hanging around his neck. We asked the interpreter one day, because we had an interpreter with us as well. We asked him what these bones were, and he said that was his former companions. Obviously, what he meant was people the family had killed, and they'd hung their bones around their neck for good luck. And he had this great big long knife, and had a hair hanging out the end. Great big long sword. That's where he cut people's heads off with. Because we had to be aware if we shot anybody, we didn't want this chap cutting this bloke's head off.
How did the work of the Borneo trackers compare with the Sakai trackers?
The Borneo trackers, they were armed with a rifle, whereas the Sakais weren't. The Sakais were just, labourers. Whereas the Ebans and the Dayak were soldiers, or they were armed. Whether I don't know how well trained they were, but they were armed, and they had a rifle. But we never experienced any ambush with them, so we didn't know how good or bad they were.
Was there much difference between the Ebans and the Dayak?
No, I didn't notice. I didn't notice any. They were the same sort of swarthy, dark skin, little short people. Always very jovial, as far as I was concerned. Always very friendly. I got on well with them.
Would you be able to know the difference between them?
Oh yes. The Ebans always had tattoos right up to their neck. You could. I suppose if you stripped them naked, I don't suppose you would. Probably only bearing for their tattoos. I don't suppose you'd notice the difference, but they used to dress when they were dressed. Of course, they dressed differently, and they used to have these bones, and they used to carry these ferocious-looking swords. Well, they was always prepared for a fight, I suppose, from their native country. But they lived basically the same in these compounds in the jungle. They lived in a commune. They both families lived in communal houses until one of the member died, and then they set fire to it, and then they moved on to another hillside. That's another thing I always remember about the Saccos. They used, when they went water cart, little things used to amuse me. And they didn't have buckets like we do. When I was talking about these bamboo poles earlier on, they would cut off about six bamboo poles, strap them all together. These bamboo poles would be about 4 foot long. They would knock out the sections in between, so you had they had one section at the bottom. When they went water cut, they would go down to the local river, local stream, lay into the water with these bamboo poles strapped to the back like a big pack. They would fill up these poles, they'd walk home, walk back to their compound with these bamboo poles on their back full of water. And then they would cut the strapping off, and they would pour the water out of these bamboo poles one at a time. As their water supply. And I was knocked out with that. I thought that was rather ingenious. Or another time, we got into a river. We were laid an ambush on a river junction at one time. And one morning, there was all these mayflies flying off the river, flying off the water. And we had a number of saccos with us this time. And they all jumped into the river. Getting hold of these large mayfly, whatever fly they were, and they got hold of their wings and they threw them into their mouths, pulling the wings off as they threw them in their mouths instantly. I was rather amused at that. I suppose it was a form of high protein, but yeah, and it was a good clean food for them. But as for a European, never seen anything like that in my life before. I was rather amused with it. I remember that particular camp, we always had to check our jungle boots before we put them on in the morning. And I put my boot on half on one day, talk about providence, I put my boot half on one day and thought, God, I haven't looked in the bottom. And I looked in the bottom because I'd had them around a fire that we'd had all night. And I looked in the bottom and there was a bandit crotch snake in the bottom. I thought, oh my God, fathers. Good job I didn't push my foot on that, otherwise I wouldn't have been here today. And we had a medical officer with us, and I went and showed it to him. I said, hey sir, look at this in the bottom of my boot. Oh my God, he said, put it on the fire quick. So I tipped it up and put it on the fire. So that was some of the hazards, or one of the hazards that you could come across. Scorpions also. Another thing that was prevalent in certain parts of the jungle. To relieve our boredom and our tedious, our European, we used to tie them together with a bit of string and let them fight. if we had time and inclination, if we stopped anywhere on an ambush quietly, because this was a very quiet affair, of course, and that used to relieve our boredom and from our tedious life of an uncomfortable world of living as a fighter in the jungle.
What were relations like with civilians in Malaya?
The civilians, we never, myself as a soldier, I never had any truck with the local people, whether they liked us, but they never threw stones or bottles at us, or they were very quiet. They were torn between two enemies, I suppose. They were torn between us, the Europeans, and also the bandits who wanted to take their country over, so... Myself, I was never involved. We used to go into local towns, into the cafes, and have food or drinks, or go into local photographer. But the majority of the country was and the local dobie wallers. But they were taking money off of us, so if any Europeans had money to offer them, well, they would jump at the idea, because a very backward country in those days. So they would jump.